Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Greg and John. How are you doing, boys?
Hey, great. How are you, Thomas?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm looking forward to this one, boys. I'm excited to talk about you transitioning into the business world, and obviously you come from that red teaming background as well, so it'll be nice to hear about that transitionary phase. It'll be nice to hear what type of guys and girls you look for when you're hiring. I think the listeners could get a lot of benefit from that. It'd be nice to uncover the truth about Vegas, John, about what happened over there last week as well. Perhaps we can get into that, but I'll start where I always start. I'm just going to do you both an intro for the listeners that don't know who you are. So John Stigglewant, you started off back in the day as an IT specialist. You were a help desk technician. Then you were an information system security specialist at Medville Medical Center. You then progressed on to BSI, Financial Services. You were senior IT security lead. You were there for about 3.5 years. You were then at VDA Labs as a senior security engineer, senior security consultant. You were then a red team lead for eClinical Works, and you are currently the co-founder of White Knight Labs. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And no worries. And Gregory Hatcher, again, you started off back in the day as a General Electric. You were helping with Hiring Our Heroes initiative. You were also a senior network engineer in the Army Special Forces Airborne. You were then a network security engineer at CDW. You were also a senior pen tester at VDA Labs. After that, you were a red team engineer. And again, you are currently the founder and co-founder of White Knight Labs. Guys, welcome to the show. Did I get your intros about right?
Okay, you should go back and redo my LinkedIn.
there's a lot missing there. So
yeah, it doesn't explain who we are.
Cool. Well, look, maybe we'll mention, we could say you were missing stuff off your LinkedIn, or we could say you were like super like security conscious. You don't want anyone to do any recon on you. So you're just staying stealthy for all the right reasons, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I'll perhaps come to you first, Greg. I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but it'd be nice to hear from both of you. Who are you? What do you get up to? What's it like for a day in the life of Greg and John? But I'll let you go first, Greg, and we'll start there if that's cool.
Yeah, sure. So my background, there's some stuff that was a hit. So I was a Green Beret in 5th Special Forces Group for 7 years, 4 combat deployments to the Middle East, started in Afghanistan, ended in Syria in 2017, got out. My first job was being a stay-at-home dad for a year. So like straight from Green Beret to stay-at-home dad, that was a really smooth transition. Yeah, so I did that for a year. Then I went right into network security over at CW. Then I pivoted to VDA under the tutelage of Dr. Jared DeMott, who now runs the MSRC over at Microsoft. That's where I met John while at VDA. We worked on a bunch of cool projects like consulting with Microsoft, improving kernel security for the Windows 10 operating system. We worked with Activision trying to do DLL injection, defeat the anti-cheat engine, like just a lot of fun projects. After that, I went over to SixGen as a CISA contractor and worked on that project. CISA has a large contract where they hire essentially subcontractors to go do penetration testing, external, internal, social engineering for the public sector, government municipalities all across the U.S. I led one of those red teams. Yeah, then after that, we started WKL in 2021. We are everything that a normal boutique offensive cybersecurity consultancy is. We do internal, external network penetration testing, API, cloud, and then even within cloud, our cloud team, I would say we specialize in Azure as opposed to AWS or GCP. Some of the things that really set us apart are we do ATM hacking. We have a very mature embedded team as well. And then we also do a physical access operations team led by myself and John. Cool. And then on the other side of the business is education. We teach 3 courses, Advanced Red Team Operations, which John wrote by hand by himself, which is all about standing up and securing red team infrastructure in the cloud across AWS, GCP, and Azure. I wrote the Offensive Development course, which is all about bypassing modern endpoint defense for the Windows operating system. And then our cloud team, led by Chirag Savla and Radhik Parmar, they wrote the Offensive Azure Operations and Tactics course, which they taught for the first time in person at VolonCon last month. So okay. That's a there's a lot there, but you can point out labs like education and services, two main departments.
So. Yeah, it'd be nice to get into where we can find those courses and how we can access them. And mate, going from a stay-at-home dad to an entrepreneur, talk about like complete opposite.
To stay-at-home dad to like learning how taxes and insurance work for a global cybersecurity consultancy. Like, how do we ensure someone that's working in Poland on an American network, and if they have an adverse effect on the network, how do we make sure that we're covered? So there was a lot of hoops to jump through outside of just being a really good engineer.
Cool. Thanks, Greg. Over to you, John. What do you do? Sounds like Greg's doing all the work, mate. Are you doing anything?
Now, honestly, guys, I just sit back here and watch Greg work, man. You know, I don't get on until like 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm off by 11. I check Slack for once in a while on my phone, pretend I'm doing a few things. This is how it goes. Isn't that right, Greg?
Just have Slack installed on his box.
Yeah, it's just, oh, I was supposed to be on today. Sorry, man. That's good. All right, I'll get my back in a little bit. Some gaps missing here, right? So as you highlighted my help desk experience, right? I started at the bottom of the barrel, right? Started at 17 years old. I was comp TIA A+ certified at 17.
John, maybe you should start in high school when you almost got kicked out.
Yeah, let's not talk.
You're already starting too late in your hacking story.
Yeah, so we're not talking about my hacking story at 16, but I come from the malware area. Windows XP, HP2 exploits, right? Started with Perl and C. Let's start with my background. Started at IT help desk. I was the youngest person in my county to get comp TIA plus certified. So I just was building PCs, built my first gaming PC at 16, 17. And I was like, hey, you know, I want to make a career out of this. So I job shadowed four or five different guys, and I'm still in high school at 17 for Crawford County. And one dude was security. He's like, yeah, dude, like we hack, I check out malware and all this kind of stuff. And like, it just sent me down this weird alley of what's a port scan? What's Nmap? And like, dude, it's like an IV in my vein, just hooked me right there. Just threw me in the ocean, the fish hooked me right out. And at that point, it was just a deep dive. And I went to college as well, and you can't learn pen testing in college 12, 13 years ago. It didn't exist. We call that what? Information security insurance. Complete crap. If you guys look at this podcast, I have no degree. Dude, I'm a college dropout. Like, I'm nothing. But started as IT help desk, shout out to some people, name it, fixing PCs, fixing Adobe, fixing Java, complete bottom of the barrel. Played junior sysadmin, played security lead, moved into a CISO, managed 9 locations. That was the most terrible thing I've ever done. All I did was PCI, NIST, SOC 2 Type 2, just audits on a daily basis. The worst thing you could possibly do. Left CISO, went into pen testing, found my calling. I was like, all right, I was working for banks, working for financials, and I had business logic. So being a CISO, you understand how a business operates, how revenue comes in, how things go on. So as a pen tester, you exploit the business logic, understanding that, and also testing vulnerabilities. So it made me a really good tester. Became a security lead really fast at BDA, then went to red teaming and found my calling. Covert operations, we tested a bunch of the Fortune 10s across 2019, 2020. And also I ran the internal testing team as well. Tested some major networks, over 150,000 servers. It was so big where Bloodhound back in the day wouldn't even load, right? Like today, I see the guys, we're very blessed on Bloodhound, the Spectre Ops team. They've made some great changes. But back in the day, you had to have some RAM load Bloodhound to get that stuff to work. So at that point, Wendy Labs already existed. We were doing contests on the side, but just internal external pen testing. Me and Greg were already partnered. I think it was 2020 when we became business partners officially. Wendy Labs existed back in 2016. We just shelf life that LLC. And we got together and said, hey, man, we're going to do this? And that was it. Best friends for life. 31 contractors and full-time employees a day. We're killing it. We're definitely going strong. It's funny, guys. Me and Greg, like, we just click. We're both business owners. We're both real estate investors. He has a goal. We have a very similar passionate goals. Building a company. We have an exit plan.
Would you say like, we're ebony and ivory?
However you want to call us, bro. I'll take it. Okay. But yeah, that's the background. That's like that's us. He comes from a very unique background with military. I more come from the banking. We've done a variety of jobs, DOD, DOJ, you name it. We've done a ton of work for many years, but I think it's our experiences, personal and, you know, private, that really helped us a lot.
Cool. Thanks, John. And it's a bit more to dive into there, because you know what? To get up to 31 people for a relatively new company that quick, that is impressive. And we glossed over it there, but I'm sure there's been a lot more to it and some ups and downs and stuff like that. So it'd be nice to dig into that. John, I see a lot of people coming in, like, for the listeners, like you get a lot of people, like especially like hacking. And I was similar in the way, like when I started reading about pen testing and hacking, at one point it was getting like between 7 and 9 hours a day. Like I just could not stop reading about it. It just grabs you. But it's interesting to hear you come in through like the help desk route and stuff like that. Do you think some people miss out that foundational step and they just want to go straight in for the hacking because it's cool and fun and exciting? Did it really benefit you having those foundational steps first? Do you think that's a big thing? Yeah.
Oh, it's a massive thing. Because thinking about it, man, what's the most common thing right now we still have, right? So especially my era, my day, and still my day, Active Directory, right? Most people have never managed Active Directory, never set up Active Directory, don't know what a GPO is or group policy object. They have no idea how user and groups actually function and give current permissions. One good example. Most people have never managed SSCM or Exchange or even seen an Exchange server online. So if these guys never had to go out there and actually fix a PC or actually help manage or address an issue, you know, how does that make you a really good pen tester? Don't get me wrong, you can learn all about pen testing all day long, but if you've worked both sides, blue team, red team, systems engineer, I think that's a really good pen tester because you understand both sides of the house. And that helps during testing as well because I understand where the IT team comes in. Frustration, things being taken down, pen testers problem on network, things happen. I've worked both sides. I get it. I think that just makes me, I would say, rounded. It's not always the best route to go. It's what worked for me. Some people can walk in there and say, hey, here's everything that's vulnerable. I don't need to know the other side. I don't care. And that's okay. I have tons of guys just like that. Phenomenal engineers.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, like I say, you need to have that intrinsic understanding of stuff. Like I say, Bloodhound's great, but it's probably more for the end because it's a great tool, but it's quite a noisy tool, isn't it? So, yeah. Cool. All right. Wicked. Thanks, John. So, Greg, we've talked about, I think we initially was chatting last year, Greg, and we had a nice chat back then, and things seem to be progressing really nicely. John just mentioned there, 31 people on the team, keeping busy. You've mentioned stuff about sales and different things. Any kind of coping mechanisms for when things have been a bit tougher? I think there's a lot of people out on the market at the minute that aren't having a rough time. There's still pockets of the market that are busy, but any kind of tips, hints, advice for the listeners about, yeah, just coping strategies or getting through tough times or mindset tips. Anything on that, mate?
Yeah, so there's two pieces of that. There's people that are trying to break into the industry and there's people that are already in the industry. Like, how do you fight burnout, right? If you're trying to get into the industry of offensive cybersecurity, it's quite flooded. It's almost like the doors are slammed closed. So you really have to set yourself apart. If everyone else is getting the OSCP, Sec Plus, Net Plus, you have to do that and then a little bit more. Like, maybe have a blog. Even if it's like on basic things like how to run Nmap, how to run Nessus, or even like how to run Nmap, but then what is Nmap doing under the hood, right? That shows that you have a thorough understanding that you're not just running the same tool set as everybody else's. And then if you're actually trying to get your like offensive cyber shop off the ground and you own it, partnerships have been critical for us. I would say the majority of our work comes through partnerships with companies that are just reselling our services. Sometimes we have to white label, sometimes we don't. But if you can get in with a larger shop that has a ton of overflow, or say they specialize in selling hardware and they have a small consulting team, but they have access to Fortune 500 companies, that is like your natural segue into Fortune 500 work. Whereas me and John, we don't have those kind of connections that like maybe like private equity does, for example. We do tons of private equity work. So say a private equity company like Apollo or BlackRock, they're going to acquire a company. We'll go in, we'll do the due diligence on the network. And then if we do a good job, that opens up a huge funnel because like BlackRock and Apollo, they own hundreds if not thousands of companies. So yeah, getting in with these service providers, MSPs, private equity, these companies that have access to not just one or two companies, but hundreds.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. I think I've noticed that even more since there's been some layoffs, especially last year. Even a lot of the consultancies are now finding that they've got an uptick and they're partnering with each other and stuff like that. So I think there's opportunity there. But yeah, thanks, Greg. Just to summarize for the listeners there then. So really getting like under the hood, if everyone's getting OSCP, have a blog to stand out as well. Don't just run Nmap, actually understand how it works. Kind of ties in quite nicely with what you said as well, John. If you're hacking ADs, understand how permissions are granted. Obviously, don't just run tools. Actually really have a deep understanding. So essentially what we're saying is actually give a shit and actually genuinely have a real passion. Don't just try and do the bare minimum. Literally go above and beyond, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Funny.
So when people are trying to break into the industry, something I look for, even if they don't have like deep like knowledge in assembly or native code, right? Are they giving back to the community? Are they writing basic tools? Are they presenting at talks, etc.? Like, for instance, we have an intern, Dave Peters, out of Grand Rapids. The dude's already writing tools. He's been in the industry less than a year. He's like shadowing projects at WKL. He wants to get his hands dirty. Dude doesn't even care if he gets paid. Like that, he has a bright future, right? All he wants to do is give and give. Go ahead, John.
No, I was going to say, Greg, and if anybody here has been on an interview, and we actually interview our own guys, like every person that's worked for us either has gone for an interview with Greg or myself, there is no outsourcing. Everybody has to go through us. We pick our team. We manage our team directly. I think that's super important. But as understanding tools like Impact It, whatever pronunciation you guys want to use, I heard engineers call Impact It, right? to my exec, asking the exec, most common interview questions I give, how does that work? What's the Python code of the backend? Does it even know how it even works? You run that on a network, you know, even for a pen test, right? What's it doing? 99% of the engineers can't answer that question. It's a fail. It's 100% fail. You're going to run a tool and you don't understand what it does, right? Creates a batch file, right? How does it receive input and output? Where's the pipe go? Things like that. So, and just really, they understand every other functionality before that. They just didn't understand what it was actually doing. They go back and say, oh, wow, that's actually stupid simple how it works. It is. But you've been running a tool for so long, you have no idea what it does. And that's, man, we need better than that. And anybody who's listening, make sure you understand your tools. Because like at the end of the day, you might need to modify that tool to get around an IOC, indicative compromise, stuff like that. So,
and it's not a heavy lift. Like you can just Responder and open up Wireshark and be like, oh, there's the LLMNR request if like they have that service turned on, etc.
Yeah, no, cool. Thanks, guys. I really like the thing as well about that guy you mentioned just wants to give and give. Like I said it the other week on a pod. If you have that mentality, everything else does just look after itself. And you need to have the belief that if you do just give and give and do the right thing, keep the quality really high, eventually everything else just falls into place. I think it's when people come into the market and they perhaps read about a big salary or they read about a skills gap, which definitely doesn't exist at the junior end of the market anyway. That's just the media talking rubbish. But I think if you come in with that mentality of not wanting to take and just really, like you say, give, I think it does pay dividends. It's a more longer term approach, but it's the right one, isn't it, guys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like just not being transactional. Okay, so I got my OSCP. Where's my $150,000 job, right? No.
That doesn't exist.
Be okay starting as a junior penetration tester, right? Be okay. One of the guys that I was mentoring, Dan Berger, he went over to TCM. His first job at TCM, guess what he was doing? He was working third shift through the night. So when people in like Africa and Asia would complete one of their certification exam, he was grading it in the middle of the night in the States. I don't think he's doing that anymore, but like he was willing to do whatever it took to be successful in the industry.
Cool. So John and Greg, between you've mentioned people writing their own tools really quickly. You've mentioned really getting under the hood and really having an understanding of what's going on the back end with various toolings. I love the example you gave because you said that guy had only been in the game like a year. So clearly you're not judging people by must have 5-6 years experience. You're judging them on their aptitude, which I love. And I'm sure a lot of people listening will be loving. So question for both of you, like anything else in addition to that, that you look for when you're building your company and when you're hiring that could help the listeners?
Background is critical. Yeah, so it really depends what we're hiring for. So if I'm hiring for web application and API, one of those engineers, I'm looking for CVEs. Do they participate in bug bounty programs? What are they doing when they're not working? If their LinkedIn profile is like 14 CVEs, I have the OSWE from offensive security, I wrote these tools, like you're getting an interview and you're probably gonna get hired. So advanced certifications, giving back community with tooling, and then CVEs is a big one. And also, how fast is their career moving? One of our engineers, Hassan Kafaji, the dude like did all the offensive security certifications in a year. So he's an OSCE V3, which is the new version of the OSCE, which John has. Mm-hmm. So that's extremely impressive. And he just did the OSMR, which is like the Mac researcher one as well. The aptitude to smoke all the offensive security certifications in a year is almost unheard of.
Yeah, cool. That's that drive, all that drive. So like from my side, years of experience doesn't matter to me. The technical interview is really important because remember, you can be the best engineer in the world, the best pen tester, find 0 days, use 1 days, whatever. But if you can't present to the client or write a report, you're worthless. And that's the biggest thing, right? If you can't present your findings, because remember, you can be the best hacker in the world and you could hack the crap out of this client. But if you can't tell a client what's wrong and how to fix it, can't work for us. Because you know, remember, you're 50-50. You got to be a hacker, but you also have to be sociable and be able to present what you found as well. And that's another big thing. We find crazy guys, 15, 18 years experience, can't present reports. Okay, right?
Yeah. Engineering and consulting are two very different skills.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. So it's a different breed of people. And that's the best thing I tell everybody. Some of the best advice I ever got was take some grammar courses, take some additional English, technical writing. I think Google has a free course out there. I don't know if I still do or not. It's been a while since that's been recommended me. I'm still terrible at grammar. Don't get me wrong. I'm still horrible. But I've gotten better over the years. So I'm just as bad as everybody else. 100%. Yeah. But I was going to say, GitHub is really important to us as well. I love it when I see people forking GitHub. I love all the forks. I love to see slight modifications. Hey, I ran into this problem on a pen test. This is my modification. Here's my publication to the world. I don't even care if it's one line. It showed me that you took a tool, you looked at the code, you went back and made a modification. That is my daily job. I take people's crap, I add my own crap to it, and I make a bigger piece of crap. And you know what? It works.
I do though. I got on a podcast. You take a turd. You like take someone else's turd. Make a big pile of poop.
Make a big pile of poop.
That's the soundbite for the pod. We'll post that.
That's up here. Just like a bigger and bigger pile of poop over time.
Yeah. So it's cool. True, so when you look at it, so obviously there's the giving back element, but is that what it is? And with the blog posts, with speaking at events, stuff like that, is that's giving you additional reassurance around being able to present findings, getting budget sign off, being able to liaise with clients? Is that what that is when you're looking at the community led activity as well?
I want to answer that. I'm gonna be brutally honest right now, right? With all the layoffs that happen with NCC and Rep 7, all that kind of stuff, the market is flooded, right? So if I put a job right now for a penetration tester, we're going to get over 600 applicants coming in. I have not enough time to look through 600 applicants. There is no automation process. If you want to find a good pen tester, you have to manually go through. So we're adding filters and search criteria around those 600 people to pull them out, such as GitHubs, such as what certifications do they have, things that stand out, right? You have to find things that stand out. If you've done talks at DEF CON, you've done things like that, just giving back, like I love GitHub searches. If you don't have a GitHub profile on your LinkedIn, on your resume, you're probably not getting an interview, honestly. Depends what you're going for, though. If you're going for just a basic pen tester, maybe, but looking for people that are going to stand out. You can't have the same resume. You can't have the same normal as well. Right now, the market's flooded. It's a really hard year for a pen tester to get a job. People are taking lower pay cuts to get in there. Everybody's not a ton of people hiring now. Yeah, we're seeing the unemployment rate even skyrocket a little bit, if you guys have been following around. So,
I would say, I'm going to interject here. Offensive security, there's like a bell curve of skills, right? Everyone wants to be an internal, external network penetration tester, but there's all these other things on the fringes and like niche things like ATM hacking, embedded, attacking the cloud, Azure, GCP, AWS. No one is doing these things. So if you can set yourself apart and build the skill set of doing these really niche things that you are world-class at, like for example, everyone wants to be a web application penetration tester. What about mobile application penetration testing? Hacking iOS is a son of a bitch. No one wants to do it. So if you're really good at hacking iOS mobile applications, you can probably get a job tomorrow.
Bless you on that. If you guys are going to do that, you're going to have a hell of a career path.
You know, like you can see John's face. It's painful. No one wants to do it. You have to break the TLS handshake, if even possible. Maybe they've implemented cert pinning wrong.
You're not even adding, getting a jailbroken iOS device today is also a terrible, painful process. Like, the emulation is also terrible for iOS. If anybody's listening to this, please go a different route. You're better off going embedded in IoT than you are on iOS.
Yeah.
I love Apple, but dang, man.
Yeah, the problem is, Thomas, like we're getting these jobs where it'll start with an embedded penetration test, but that embedded device will talk over Bluetooth or LTE to a mobile application that also talks to a back-end cloud. And if this is like an embedded medical device that a startup is bringing to market, every piece of that chain has to be attacked and it has to be inventoried for software build materials from the cloud to the API to the mobile app to the embedded device and the firmware. So that's typically one, at least two people on that engagement.
Okay. Yeah, no, cool. What's the ATM hacking? That must be fun.
Yeah. I did a ton of jobs for Diebold, right? So obviously Diebold Nixdorf, I think they did a chapter 11, unfortunately. So I'm not sure where they stand today. I have not been following the ATM hacking. So I come from the era of jackpotting, black boxing ATMs, right? I've tested many ATMs over the years. It's quite interesting work. I would say Diebold does a really good job. I never got a chance to test the, was it NTRs? I think that's what it is, or whatever the other brand is. It's always been Diebold on my side. We have a few engineers who are world-class hackers who presented a lot of findings, especially around CVEs and things like that, on some of the software protecting the ATMs. I'm more of the hardware, break open the box, drilling, things like that. I've done a lot of the software side as well. So ATM hacking is very interesting. So the banking world is, there's two ways it's done. You either work for Diebold or NCR or whatever they're going to be directly and test the ATMs to be part of the security team. I know there's tons of teams in Germany there, some in the US side as well, but most ATMs are not made in the US, or some are. Each country has their own standards restrictions. In our case here, most ATM pen tests are done from the network side, right? So most banks will have people come in, they'll test vulnerability scanning, network pen testing. Some guys will land on ATMs. If you don't buy the additional software, it's basically the more money you pay, the more secure your ATM will be. Obviously, in America, we don't see people taking excavators down the road, knocking bank walls down, and driving off with ATMs. That does happen all the time in different countries.
That's on YouTube.
It happens all the time. So I had a chance to work on the Brazilian side of the ATMs, and that stuff blew my mind. Another really interesting thing I'll give for a lot of background is ink printing. You know what? We all saw the bank movies, the robbers, right, run out, and the ink blows up on money. there's a whole standard behind if you're allowed to do that or not on an ATM. It's a crazy, crazy theory kind of stuff. And so I can't go too much into it. But when you do steal money, it actually costs money to ruin that money. Let me get me started. So quite interesting on how that works. ATM hacking, that's a very unique field of testing. It's very hard to get into. Because like, the funny thing is you can go buy an ATM right now. You could get a whole bunch of them and start tearing apart just a regular PC. But getting access to the software and getting access to a working ATM is actually quite difficult.
Yeah, cool, guys. And listen, I'm really liking this so far. And I'm liking a lot of the stuff you mentioned. Like, I know we talked about how difficult certain routes are to take and aspects are, but there's a lot of stuff that you're both saying that I know not everyone's doing. And it's so interesting to see you get 600 people on an advert, you're running search parameters. So the people that aren't doing a blog, haven't got a GitHub repo, they're not even getting looked at. So they haven't even got a chance. So it's just really nice for listeners to hear that.
Yeah. Yep. It's interesting. I wish we could look at every single person and give everybody an interview. It's almost impossible, though. There's too many people, right? You can't. It's impossible.
You can't. And I think another thing for folks listening is, if they are struggling out there on the market and they are finding it tough, it's still massively worth doing all these things we're talking about, because the market is highly cyclical. It's pegged to the economy. When we're in a boom, we're on the way to the bust. When we're in a bust, we're on the way to the boom. So for those people listening, now's the time to really upskill, really double down and really go for it and just essentially disappear for 6 months and just absolutely cane it. Because then when things do tip back, it's just bang and you're off to the races.
Yeah, Tom, I love that you bring that up, because a lot of engineers, when they're entry level, just breaking into the sector, they'll try to be good at everything, which is impossible, right? Like, you can't be good at embedded, web app, mobile, Active Directory, exploit development. So what we look for is, we want our engineers to be really good at one or two things. So it's similar to a special forces team. If you're on a special forces A team, I was in communications. So all I handled was communications for the team, routing, switching, VoIP, high side, low side. If my captain had to call back to the States, it was my responsibility to make sure he got done. That being said, there's also guys on the team that were medics, or they worked in explosives, or they specialized in weapons. So at WKL, all of our engineers only do one or two things. So web app API, our cloud team, all they do is attack Azure all day, and they find OData and vulnerabilities and report those to Microsoft. Our embedded team, all they do is attack embedded medical devices. Go ahead, John. I think I interrupted you.
No, keep going. That was good. No, I think that's really good. That's true. We have some well-rounded players. We have teams dedicated to each service offering. Like, I can't put an embedded tester on a web application pen test who's never done web app, who doesn't understand going above the OWASP top 10, scanning the SAN CWEs. They don't understand. It doesn't make sense. We go for the gold standard for our testing. So I think that's where someone needs to fall into on playing on that. So super important.
Cool. Yeah, just jumping back to the business side of things for a minute, guys. So I know, Greg, you talked about having partnerships, and you've got someone that knows Apollo or BlackRock. How does those partnerships come about? So I understand, like, getting stuck into Apollo would be an absolute mission, and it'll be a very long-term client acquisition process. But obviously, this bit you're talking about, this partnership ground, sounds really good. You've got to headcount of over 30, like, rapid, really quick. It sounds like things are going well. So, yeah, how does that come about? Is that existing relationships, or is that you two going out to market and doing stuff? Or is John getting chatting to someone over a beer? What's going on?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Usually, like, cold DMs on LinkedIn don't go anywhere. One of our partners has to recommend us to another partner. So it's all word of mouth. Like, hey, I trust this person. They're in the trust tree. The bona fides is complete. They've done X, Y, Z and many engagements with us. You should go work with WKL. And like, once that spider web starts, it just goes and goes and moves laterally and deeper. So yeah, MSPs, private equity, these large like hardware service providers like CDW, Trace3. If you can get into any of those, they almost have an unlimited amount of clients.
Yeah, no, cool. So really, it's like in the age of AI and automation and all the rest of it, it's the old school relationship building, referral, recommendation, doing a good job, staying in the same space for a while.
Yep, it's the golf course, the coffee shop, shaking hands, kissing babies. It's being a human being, be relatable, being likable, right? No one's going to partner with you if they don't like being around you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Cool. And What do you know now, John, about running a business that you wish you knew 3 years ago, mate?
It's all about connections. It's all about understanding people, passionate. Understanding people is really good. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, you have to be sociable, right? You can't just be an engineer and be like, yep, I'm going to start a business. doesn't work that way, right? You have to be willing to bend and change your mindset and evolve as technology evolves. Pen testing 10 years ago is not pen testing today. It's a little bit different than what it used to be. Also understanding the shift in the market, right? We talk about like the US companies, are they actually looking for a pen test? Are they just looking for a bone scan? Like, what do they really need? Understanding what the client needs are, and understanding how to communicate that to an IT manager, to an engineer, to the C-suite. That's super important, just talking with people. Obviously, we're pretty informal on the podcast, right? Things like that. But when we're on a C-suite call, it's a whole different ballgame, right? Being able to mend to those people, understand what they need, toning down or toning up certain things. So it's ever evolving, right? You just kind of, you feel the call and how it's going, and you change yourself. So you have to be somewhat salesy. I know that sounds terrible, right? I hate being salesy. I hate having to sell myself, sell my company like that. I just want to be deep in research, deep in code, right? Down in assembly. If anybody knows me, I love assembly, just down in assembly, but can't do it every day.
Yeah, cool. I like what you said there, John, because it's, does someone need a pen test or do they need a vulnerability scan? It's like when a client says, I need a red team engagement. It's, hang on a minute, where's your security posture?
Most clients don't need a red team.
Exactly.
I'll be honest, Thomas, like the vast majority of our clients, they're probably like in the upper end of maturity. So okay. Like cybersecurity maturity, it's like a pyramid, right? Like at the baseline, are you doing hardware and software asset inventory? And then are you doing vulnerability scanning? That would be the next layer up in the pyramid. Then are you doing penetration testing? Okay, have you been penetration tested for 5 years? Okay, maybe you can do a purple team or a red team. And those companies are at the very top of the pyramid. That would be like the Coca-Colas, the Walmarts. Like they have a SOC team, they have an MDR service, et cetera. Yeah, the vast majority of our clients are right like the penetration test / red team layers.
Yeah, I think there's two things with red team. I think the clients realize what it entails. Do they realize how much these things cost because they're not cheap? And I think a lot of pen testers, I think they want to get into red team. And do they actually understand the reality of what it means to be on a red team engagement for months and months at a time? Like, you're not popping shells every 5 minutes. It's like times that are really good fun and times that perhaps aren't and require a bit of patience and persistence and stuff like that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, so
I have a lot of horror stories on red teaming.
Yeah, something that doesn't talk a lot is how painful red teaming is. Like you could just beat out a network for 1-2 months, but if someone isn't gritty and they don't have that persistence, they're probably not going to make it. This is not like a penetration test. So a huge difference in skill set.
Yeah, red teaming sucks, 100%. I love the research, all the bypasses. That's the best part. Setting up the C2 infrastructure, bypassing, winning domain admin, going for the objectives. Because obviously a red team is objective based, right? But then it's boom, like you do it all. Now I got to write a 130-page report. Hopefully I took screenshots and I accounted for everything I did. If I present this correctly to the C-suite. When we do a red team, we don't just do a testable report. We do the executive summary, add findings, detections that happened, the attack path, adding in everything that was relevant, any indicator of compromise, keeping all the hashes, all the files you use. The amount of logging you have to do on your side is terrible. 130-page red team report will say 6 to 8 weeks, sure. But then we got to turn that into a PowerPoint and present that to the executive C-suite. Sucks. It sucks. I don't care who you are. It's a terrible process because it's 15 days of reporting. So don't get me wrong, I love red teams. I come from a red team background. I love the covert side. I think it's the best thing in the world. But anything after that just blows.
Yeah, the level of effort is not similar.
Yeah, like you say, unless you mentioned it earlier, if you can't present, if you can't get budget sign up, unless you want to do bug bounty on a self-employed or a freelance basis, you need to get good for these things, definitely. Yeah.
Thomas, honestly, man, one thing that we've done, and as I talked about before, the U.S. market shifts, right? No one wants an 8 or 10 week engagement anymore. It's pretty rare. We have a few that come in. We do 3, 6, 7 year that are the long engagements, right? Our most common one now is we've turned with the market. We're doing insider threat assessments, seated access, assumed point of breach, 15 days, 10 days, whatever the client can afford. And we're forming down to the budgetary requirements. I know that sounds terrible, but like clients really need to know, hey, if I have a stolen laptop, what can you do? That's a perfect fit for us. I'll show you what I can do with a stolen laptop. And it's mind blowing, right? You give one of my engineers and myself a stolen laptop, we'll run C2 like a normal malicious hacker would, breach email, whatever, boom. We have access to all the information. My most famous one in every call for an IT manager, and most can't answer it. How do I cripple your business to the knees? Like, how would you rip my business apart? I need to understand the revenue. I need to understand what the objectives are. Is that tearing down a database? If I shut down your database for a week, are you out of business? You're closing your doors? Is it me selling your contracts to a foreign competitor? What is it that would cripple the company? So let me emulate an attack against an ATP, Advanced Threat Persistent, an actual ransomware group. I need to pretend to be that group. And like, what would I do? Obviously, there's certain things we can and can't do, like wire transfers, stealing all the money in the account. But you have insurance, right? So there's certain things you can do and can't. We need to simulate those attacks. And that's how a real red team should be focused, right? Completing the objective without causing business disruptions. That is so important to understand. And most red teams today don't do that. And that's where we fall into place here. We try to go for the objective-based tactical scenarios.
Cool. I bet doing that insider threat stuff is pretty Interesting, though, isn't it?
It's easy, yep. and the reporting is so nice.
You like your jokes, no reporting.
Because, that's what tells a story, right? It's hard to tell a story over 10 weeks, but it's easy to tell a story over 2 or 3 weeks because the client can say, hey, you know what? Let's do this again. This is really good. We'll come back. We'll take your findings. We'll fix that. 3 months later, they come back for another insider threat assessment. Now let's do a different objective. Now, hey, we're going to start in Azure. Can you get on-prem access? Sure. We'd love to try. Why not?
What me and John's favorite things to do is actually spoof a vendor, similarly to the HVAC target hack. So we'll do a bunch of open source intelligence. Hey, they use this plumber. We'll get the costume, the badge of that plumber. We'll go on site. We'll just open the door to the server room. It works out pretty well for us usually.
Yeah, we have some custom. I was going to say, we have some custom Raspberry Pis. We haven't released code on it yet, but we got 4G dongles to work over the new Raspberry Pi. So all we do is just set up some fancy routes and we'll just have reverse SSH tunnels reaching in. So we just plug a box in. Hopefully they don't have NAC, right? We would know if they have NAC or not. We would change our passive monitoring technologies then. But basically just a 4G dongle talking out to a Raspberry Pi nonstop. And that's how we connect in. And we hide it. I have the Velcro sticking in the back. We just plant them right behind servers or plug them in. Boom. Access.
If there's time. We did a physical last year where I didn't have time to hide it because the alarm was going off and the police were actively coming to the building. So I left the Raspberry Pi right on the middle of the floor.
But hey, we had access though. We got access.
Greg, when we were talking last year, you were telling me about a physical. Something had happened on a physical. Do you do a lot of physicals? Do you get a lot of that work?
We did 3 in Q4 of last year. It's been pretty light this year. We did just get another one signed though in Michigan. So
Cool. Yeah. What, do you two always do them? Do you like getting involved with them, or do the guys do them? Or
yeah, usually we John do. Flies over. It's like a mini vacation.
Mini vacation. Well.
We had one that didn't end well recently, so that's still top of mind for us.
Cool. So, guys, you've mentioned there's the transition to the business phase. You've mentioned like real estate investing and stuff like that. Have you two had mentors over the years? If you have, can you tell us about them? How did you get them? Is there anything the mentors have taught you guys that could help the folks listening now?
Yeah, sure. I would say as I was transitioning out of Special Forces, some of my biggest mentors were with Elite Meat, which is a nonprofit that helps transitioning soft veterans get in jobs in the private sector. So I went to several events. One was in Seattle. And the two people that ran that organization back then were Jordan Selleck and then John Allen. I think John Allen is one of the top podcasts in the world now. He's Mr. Ballin is what he goes by. But they were super influential and understanding my value to the marketplace in the private sector coming back from the Special Forces background was critical because I was like, I don't have any skills. Like that is not the case. And then once I actually got into offensive cyber, I would say that Dr. Jared DeMott, who runs the MSRC now, he was probably my biggest mentor. And then also a couple of guys at VDA took me under their wing, Michael Fowle, who's over at Microsoft now. He was a really good mentor as far as being curious, things to work on. As far as sometimes you almost have an exploit working. It's just like that last 1 yard that you have to get to. So I'll bring guys in for that.
Cool. Jump.
Yeah. So mentors for me. Yeah. Same with Greg, right? So a lot of my previous bosses or colleagues, things like that. My mentors more fall towards the real estate side, though. So I have a few different guys I've worked with all over the world where they help with investments or pain points they've done because, me and Greg are both real estate investors. So those are my biggest mentors. My biggest secret for cybersecurity is I'll watch what others do, especially on LinkedIn marketing, see what the newest certs are, the newest technologies, what they're posting, and learn from them, right? I'm always surfing through LinkedIn. People above me and below me, it doesn't matter. I'm just a lowly, humble servant to the cybersecurity community. And I love to see people giving back. And that's how I stay connected and see what people are doing. I post it back to my team. I say, hey, check out this cool stuff. I say, oh, hey, I helped write that. I was like, oh, sweet, dude. That's super, super cool. Like, that's where I fall in there is just watching people on LinkedIn. That's the top line right now. I think LinkedIn, especially Twitter X, whatever you want to call them today. Yeah, I've seen a huge drop from cybersecurity and a big push over to LinkedIn now. So.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn's really coming into its own. And it's a good point you make there, mate, because back in the day, to have a mentor, you would have literally had to have known that person or get an intro. Whereas now, you could have a mentor on YouTube, on LinkedIn, and perhaps you've never even met them, but they're really helping your career growth. So it's a good point. I like it. Cool. Earlier on, you talked about the offensive, you talked about a course. An ops team course. You talked about building red team cloud infrastructure environment. Can you tell us more about that? Can you tell us how to access the course? Can you tell us how it will benefit for the listeners, guys?
Sure. Yeah, I'll take the learning side of the house. We'll do a nice little promotion on what we have going on. We have our flagship course, Offensive Development, right? So we have three courses, Offensive Development, Advanced Red Team Operations, and the Offensive Azure and Tactics, right? everything's taught live right now. Those three courses will be going on demand in the next 30 days, which is super cool. That's our goal, to take everything on demand as well. On top of that, we also have a few new courses coming out as well. We have a Red Team Automation and Infrastructure course, which expands on the ARTO, Advanced Red Team Operations, will be only taught on demand. This will cover C2 across multiple frameworks, redirectors, automation, building inside AWS and Azure with Terraform, and also the CLI and Clouded. Super cool stuff. We have another one, which will be an embedded course coming out, which Greg is handling with our embedded team. Another one that's really coming out that I really is also lateral movement and also the initial foothold course that we're working on for Red Team. And when we say Red Team, that you don't have to be a Red Team member to use the courses, right? It also works with penetration testers because you have to have some experience to get into Red Teaming, right? Some really big things we're doing, which we haven't announced yet on Twitter, but it's in the works right now, is, and I'm going to go on a little tangent here. Offensive security
here we go.
Offensive security made my career. It really did. The OSCP, I have the OSCE as well. I'm one of the originals, 2017 era, right? Stigs is my handle. If you guys know me, I was on the, before offensive security switched over to Discord, I was Stigs. Gotnuck was on there. All the guys were on there, right? The originals, right? That's what I call them, the originals. I'm still below like the 27,000 era, like of people. It was like one of the originals back in the day. Offensive security went government and they now do the proctor exam for the desktop monitoring. I'm not a big fan of that. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm not a huge fan. I do like you can get the courses for $5,000, take them all in a year, but you got to do the proctored exam. I think we're going to see offensive security shift out of the market eventually and go more towards like the SANS era and things like that. I still think the OSCP, you know, is a big requirement for a lot of jobs and you should get it. We're working on our own version of a certification. So we're now going to start offering certifications and we now have something that works called the ELPT, the entry-level penetration tester. It's going to take you through an external and internal pen test. Over 700 pages of content, massive course. It will take you through understanding what a pen test is to writing a report at the end of the course. And then you take a 48-hour exam. Very good. So it's going to start as an external pen test where you set up your own calculus box. And then you get shifted to an internal pen test. You have to complete all the objectives, hack all the boxes, includes Active Directory, includes some cloud components. And then if you pass or fail, you get the certification. It's going to be a good entry-level course. We saw everything that was out in the market and you know what? We decided to do our own thing. On top of that, as you guys know, we have it's called Dark Knight Labs. So it's our own version of AV EDR bypasses and code storage on what we need today. So includes native C++, Rust, and Go. All four languages containing all the AV EDR bypasses we have for a user description. So cool. Those are the biggest things we have right now. So lots of cool things coming
cool.
up.
Is that all?
You know what? There's probably a few things I'm forgetting.
About this time next year, the education side is probably going to be like 3x bigger than it is right now.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I know you're saying we'll wrap it up soon because I know you guys are mega busy. But yeah, what we'll do is we'll put all this stuff in the show notes as well. So if you ping me, Greg or John, and we'll get all this stuff in the show notes for when we release. But I know I promised you guys an hour. I think we are about an hour now. I'll just ask you one more question before we shoot off. Favorite book, podcast, online content you've consumed at any point over your career? Could be security related, could be business related, could be self-help. What could help the listeners the most out there? Book, content, pod, anything?
Yeah, that's easy for me. So podcasts would be Dark Knight Diaries. Jack Reciter does a deep dive, like really deep into topics that are really fascinating for cybersecurity. He talks about this book called Sandworm, he talks about Stuxnet, he talks about the NSA, like hacking Americans, really cool stuff. And then I would say book would be Napoleon Hill's Thinking Grow Rich, just because he talked about like auto-suggestion, how to actually use your brain to make money as opposed to swinging a hammer. Go ahead, John.
Dark Knight Diaries. Honestly, my biggest thing is just following people on LinkedIn, man. Just some of the posts and some of the authors. Any of the Red Team authors, I follow them on LinkedIn. I'm always trying to see the newest techniques or things they're doing. Any of the Red Team diaries, any of the Red Team books out there, hacker stories, you learn from them on what to do and what not to do. Learn from people's mistakes. I think that's a big key here, right? Try not to repeat the same wheel that we're always repeating, right? Mm-hmm. I do love to hear Dark Knight Diaries. I've always wanted to get on there and talk about some of our horror stories and some of the really bad situations we've been put into. for another day.
Thank you. Packed full of information. And I know you're both mega busy. So genuinely appreciate your time. Thanks, John. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Thanks.